Had you actually read the email, you would know that the podcast you are about to listen to could contain explicit language and offensive content. These HR experts' views are not representative of their past, present, or future employers. If you've ever heard, "My manager is unfair to me,"
"I need you to reset my HR portal password,"
or
"Can I write up my employee for crying too much?"
Welcome to our little safe zone. Welcome to Jaded HR.
Welcome to Jaded HR, the podcast by three HR professionals who want to help you get through the workday by saying everything you're thinking, but say it out loud. I'm Warren.
I'm Jasmine.
I'm Christina.
All right, we got it down. Third time, fourth time. What is this, fifth time a charm?
Time you pressed the record button. I was like, wait, we didn't talk about who was saying first.
Who goes first? But it worked. Improv is good. So anyhow, so it's been a while since y'all been online with us, or been on there with us. So yeah, I'm glad to get y'all back. I'm glad you're willing to pinch hit for Cece as she is out. But we're going to have a series of pinch hitters while Cece is being with baby. But before we get to our show today, I want to announce we have yet another new Patreon supporter, Michael. So Michael joins Bill and Hallie, the original Jaded HR rockstar, as our Patreon supporter. So thank you very much for your contribution. You can be like them and support us on Patreon. But if you want to support the show, you can also leave us a review. Send us a note on a story, a note, something like that on social media. Let us know, and we'll get you on here and talk about your story. So that is what I want to cover for that today. But we got a cool topic today, and it's inspired by a conversation I had with a friend, shitty recruiting tactics. And I really thought that we would be beyond shitty recruiting tactics, especially in this economy. But it appears not, and we were talking off air. I think both of you have some experience with shitty recruiting tactics in this economy, but I don't know. So I'll go ahead and dive in with my friend's story. They work at a position at IT, and they got a call from a recruiter, and they're happy in their job. They weren't really looking to look. They don't know where the resume got found or anything like that, but they engaged, said, okay, let's just see where this goes. And they had their phone interview with the recruiter, first round phone interview with the company, and then a second round in person with the company. And then a few days later, they got called with an offer. And you think, oh, it sounds like everything's worked the way it's supposed to. No, they told me had till 5 o'clock that day to accept or decline their offer because they had like five other well-qualified candidates, but he was their number one pick and they wanted to have him. And he just said, no, I'm not playing that game. That's not for me. I'm not going to make a big decision in a few hours like that. So he just told him flat out no. And about a week later, he got another call from him and said, hey, we'd like to see if you're still interested in position. And he said, no, I'm not.
When I said no, I meant no.
No, no means no. But
so they called him back. After he was like, listen, this is not for me. And they said, we have a new offer for you, well, even though we said.
They had to get through the other, four or five candidates?
To all tell no.
So, I mean, it took them a minute. Then they popped back in and said, hey. So
what do you think? Do you think five other people told them no? Or do you think there was no other people?
There were no other people.
In this economy, searching for y'all are both have very good experience in recruiting, more recent than my experience in recruiting. And to have one good candidate, much less five, I mean, if I had the ability, I would hire five people if I found them and just put it up on operations. Hey, your turn.
And it's not to say that they didn't find great candidates that could have filled that role, but to me, when you are pressuring someone, that pressure is because, yeah, we might have some other candidates, but we really don't want to go with them. We really would like to go with you. Or this is a quick turnaround. Christina, you know, in government, you know, this is a quick turnaround. We have to get this signed off. today or else we can't be it. So it's not to say that there weren't other people, but I mean, there's a good chance that no, it was just, especially with how quick the phone interview to the in-person or other virtual interviews that they were having. That means they had to also do that with, you know, at least those other five candidates. Other candidates too. It's just questionable.
I didn't
to
think
me.
About it that way, but you're on to something there.
Okay, I want to back up for just a second. As a recruiter, I hate this story because it really, it's evidence against what I tell everyone to do, because I think that your friend started off great, right? He just was like, let me respond to this message and see what comes of it. And I think that that's great. I think there's no harm in that. If you are working and you get a message from a recruiter, I don't think it's nice to ignore recruiters. I don't think it's nice to be rude to recruiters and be like, get the hell out of here. What are you messaging me for? Because they're just trying to do their job. But to then take that opportunity where someone did entertain your message and then try to strong arm them into making a very quick decision, when it sounds like you weren't honest in the process, like that's too much. That is why people are more inclined to just ignore our messages or just to tell us like, you're stupid, I hate you, I don't want to work with you. So that kills this whole, like, I don't know that recruiter. I have no idea who they are, but I don't like you, whoever you are.
Jasmine and I talk about this
all the time. Changing jobs is a big decision for someone to make. And so especially if I recruited someone who is happily employed, I will go to great lengths to try to talk them out of accepting an offer to make sure that they are truly interested in this opportunity. So there is no, I need a decision from you by morning. There is no, I don't like the 24-hour thing. You got to give people ample time to like really think through what are their questions. What does this process look like? How does this impact them? How does it impact their family? How does it impact their daily routine? And everything. There's so much to think through. It's such a big decision.
And that was my thing with it, too, is like you have to. It seems that in this situation, it moved very fast. And when you're happy, sometimes you don't think about the things that are there making you happy until you go to that other position and you're like, oh, wait a minute. You know, we did talk about benefits, but I had this at my previous job. And you said, as you know, this recruiter that was trying to get me in, you said this would be one thing. And then it turns around and that's not true. So it's like, how can you really, truly get to know the things that you need to know? You can't know everything about a company. To me, I don't believe you can know everything about a company before you accept their offer letter. Oh. But certain things that you can know, if you don't have the time to do that, right there is the red flag.
And they're not giving you the time. Even if I don't know if he asked, hey, I need more time. But he just said, once they told him, you have to tell me by 5 o'clock today. And he was like, no.
Well, let me make this simple. Before we get off the phone, I can go ahead and tell you no.
Yeah. But this economy, I would think you're going to, you know, nurture your candidate and hold their hand and caress them and send them nice little text messages. I'm still thinking about you when you've got that nice candidate that you want in the recruiting world. You know, that's what you have to do these days.
Well, that was like 2 years ago. Now the tide is turning where it's like, oh, where the employers have the upper hand again. So we no longer need to hold hands and we don't need to reach out to people and see, hey, do you have any questions? Now it's just like, you know, I'm giving you this information, make a decision. And I don't think that's really what the market looks like, but I do think that's what people think that is what the market is now, is that, oh, well, y'all had y'all 2-3 years of working from home. Y'all had y'all 2-3 years of getting like crazy sign-on bonuses or salaries or all of that. But now it is time for us to take back. Y'all are going to come in this office that I pay for. Y'all are going to hit the bare minimum of what we should or have to pay. And y'all are going to be okay with it because now everyone needs a job.
Yeah. Do you think the employers are in charge now?
Huh? What did you say?
Oh, I was asking, do you think the employers really are in charge now? Or I still think it's a candidate's market. There's so many jobs out there.
Listen, let's be honest. It is always a candidate's market because if you are an employer and you need to hire people, candidates always have the power to say no. They always have the opportunity to negotiate. They always have another option. Even if I think all the way back to 2008, when it was not looking good out there, the people who wanted to find another job had options. I think even in 2012, when everything was coming back, they still had options. They have options. They don't have to accept. Until we change hiring to reflect what the WNBA draft that is happening right this minute, and all of the employers get to put us in one room and they get to just pick us off one by one, it is a candidate's market. Once we move to a draft style hiring process, it is no longer a candidate's market. You just like cross your fingers and hope the team that you want to work with picks
Christina, you have just been drafted to Florida. What is your reaction?
Oh my God.
You have to, and it will be even better. Like once you get so far up in your career, you now have to be the state HR person. So you have been drafted to be the state of Florida's HR go-to person.
I would rather work at the worst McDonald's you've ever been at. Okay. The worst McDonald's. Whatever you're thinking of, multiply it by 50. Do not draft me to Florida. What in the world? That I'm gonna have nightmares. Thank you, Jasmine. Thank you.
Well, this sort of goes perfectly into something we were discussing offline. The WNBA draft is going on right now as we're speaking. Mm-hmm. And how that would work if everybody's careers were chosen by employers just lining you up and you get virtually no say in what where you go. I know their agents are working business deals. Hey, my client, if you select them, my client will take a 5-year deal versus a 10-year deal, you know, all that other, you know, Jerry Maguire crap behind the scenes there. But that would just be crazy. And then we were also talking the NBA, WNBA drafts are a lottery system, so the team's order is random. But in like the NFL, you go to that, and the last place team gets the number one pick. And if you're that number one recruit, you just got screwed.
You know what, though? That is like the picture perfect. Like that plays out so perfectly because we've all worked with that one person who like doesn't really pull their weight in the office and they just kind of do the bare minimum and then they get like promoted or they get a raise and no one's adding more work to their desk. So that like mid-tier player that ends up getting drafted to like one of the best team where he's not going to have to do any work. Like, hell, maybe we're already living in a draft society. The recruiters are just the agents.
I was going to say, I kind of feel like in certain aspects of it, it's not as bad. But it is a little bit like the drafts, and not just WNBA. It's also like NFL, like with picking benefits and the salaries, like, or even with salary of companies or states and cities that say, oh, you have to, the range is from 1 cent to 2 cent. Like, and then you got to be drafted into that. You're just like,
oh.
Can I just retire?
Man, we have lost.
Somebody's got to be the HR director of Chipotle.
You know, I'd take that over Florida.
I don't feel like that would be, you know, It has its ups and downs, but...
No, they're just always in the news for doing something extremely stupid.
Oh,
and so, that's yeah.
true. But I can handle that. I can fix extremely stupid. I cannot fix Florida. I cannot fix Florida. So, you know, I think that it's always funny whenever employers like feel like they start doing, like you said, Jasmine, it's an employer's market now. We get to kind of do whatever we want in this deal and then expect you, a very qualified, sought after person, to make a decision by 5 p.m. when you went through, I don't know, 30 rounds of interviews. It took you 30 days to look at the first application you got. Or, you know, sometimes I get a new client and it's like, we've had this job posted for 3 months, but no one's had time to go through the applications to see who we should interview. And I'm like, those people who applied 3 months ago are like,
they're gone.
They're giving you shitty reviews on Google right now. They're not interested in coming to work for you anymore. Like, you haven't said a word to them. You take your time on doing everything possible. Or I had a scenario last year. I had a very, very difficult, highly technical position to fill. I'm super proud of myself. I found a really good candidate. Everything's going well. He's enjoying them. They're enjoying him. This is like perfect. And so they get into salary negotiations and I back out because I don't care. You guys work it out. And they come up with a really, really good offer for him. So like a good enough offer that he probably would have said yes by 5 p.m. that day. You know, I mean, he couldn't turn it down. And then he goes to work and then suddenly they have an issue that they can't resolve. And it has nothing to do with him. It has to do with their customers. And so they're like, oh, we gotta lay this person off. So specialized, there's nowhere else in the organization for this person to go. And now I'm like, we did all that work and you didn't think far enough through to see this, but you expect candidates to be okay with whatever you put in front of you. Like, not this particular client, but all employers. You yeah. want candidates to be okay with whatever you put in front of them. But then don't turn around and give them the same respect when it's time to have the reverse conversation. And it makes no sense to me. Either you want to be that personalized organization where we're a family or whatever people say, or you don't. And it's okay if you don't. I prefer if you don't. But that means you have to take that into consideration through the entire process, right? You can't pretend you are. And then when you have to make a difficult decision, just kick someone to the curb with no second thought.
That's why I have a really big issue like with what leadership expects, not only out of candidates that they're looking to have in or join the company, but also of their employees that they currently have right now. And one issue that this might be going off on a tangent in a different direction, but is when you're showing more respect and more appreciation to the people that you're recruiting versus the people that you already have on staff and thinking about those employees. But leadership, from what I have seen, has taken a really big downfall in saying, oh, well, you know, we're the leaders. We know everything. We know what organizations are doing. I'm talking to other CEOs, so clearly I know what other companies are doing.
I talk to other CEOs who also don't know the details of what's happening at the day-to-day level.
And that, so I was like sitting out literally getting my hair done today. And I was listening to my stylist talk to some other ladies about, you know, they have an employee that they're not really sure if the employee is getting, like they assign the employee a task. And in their mind, they gave the employee what that employee should talk about, doing a cold call, you know, this is what I want you to talk about. But then you don't go and actually train that person. And so when that person says, hey, I don't really know what I should say or how should I address if they come to me with this, but you're expecting them to just pick it up and understand it. You're expecting candidates to just say, hey, I'm going to go out and research and do all of the things that the recruiter or the hiring manager or whoever it is should be talking and telling me about. You're expecting a candidate to do that and then also say, hey, why do I have to keep following up with you? You claim you want me, but you haven't, we've had this phone screen, but then you haven't reached back out. Like, what are we going to do here?
Well, ghosting is real. Everybody's talking about it. I mean, I hate these terms, but ghosting is a real legitimate term that has to be talked about, I think, because, and I'm probably guilty of it too. My goal, if I don't ever talk to you and I just screen your resume and I'm not going to go forward with you, click the button and you get an email. But after we've talked, I'm going to at least try to leave you a message, say, hey, I'm sorry, we're going to go another direction, or this isn't going to work for us, or whatever it is. Something in person. I'm not going to bend over backwards and try and leave you 5 messages until I get you, but I'm going to try and make it as personal as I can. Because honestly, you had that candidate in your hand. There was some interest on both ends at some point. Maybe next month, maybe next year, there's going to be another opportunity that person would be the perfect fit for. You can't go burning, the recruiters and the hiring managers can't go burning bridges with these candidates, because in smaller areas like where I'm at, people are going to know quickly, oh, don't even apply there. They're crap.
And you know what else too? It's not just phone screens. Let me say this to all recruiters, hiring managers, whoever you want to be. If you have a candidate complete a take home assignment, and that candidate does that assignment, because a lot of the times, like Tom, you send me an email and say, oh, I need you to do this. No. We can talk about it, but I'm not going to do this assignment. But if you have someone complete assignments and then you do not follow up with them, burn down the building.
Those assignments cannot be trusted. They cannot be trusted. I saw a tweet. It's been a couple of months ago now, and somebody, and you know, there's some smart influencers, there's some influencers that are just clickbait, and there's some influencers who I think actually believe the stuff that comes out of their mouth. This woman in a leadership role somewhere tweeted out something about an interview hack, and it's basically like giving candidates the homework of like whatever their problem is right now, have 4 or 5 top candidates complete it, and then you don't have to hire anybody. And I was like, oh my God, that is a horrible idea. That is so bad. That is not a good way. That is definitely falls under the shady recruiting that we're talking about.
Before we go on, do not burn down these people building, because I don't have no insurance money to give you. So it was a
and
gut reaction.
I gave all my money to the IRS today, so I can't help you either.
Oh, yes.
I cannot help you either.
I've heard that a lot of places, if you give work assignments or trial assignments to people, that's compensable. They should be paying you, even if it's, you know, for that work, especially, you know, if you're doing something shady like that person on Twitter, hey, let's just give everybody a sign. Then we get 5 choices, options. Hey, let's then let them work their, hey, give them your hardest problem and see who solves it, and don't hire.
And then you're upset that candidates have these experiences. Like, we get it. We know all recruiters, all employers are not the same. But when a candidate is going through this experience and, you know, they're in this job market, and this job market is not easy. It's hard to continue to get no's when you know you are a valuable person who brings a lot, who can bring a lot to an organization. So it's still hard to get the no's. But I think we need to be like, just have more grace with candidates. Not saying that candidates need to be able to walk over people or whatever recruiters are fearing, but like acknowledge the job market and what it is.
Okay, time out. Don't blame it all on the recruiters because...
Well, it's not just recruiters, no.
There's a hiring manager behind that recruiter telling them, like, this is. And we don't have as much pull as we would like to think we do all the time.
No, I completely agree with that. And I also think of that in the HR sense. Like, a lot of people are like, I can't believe HR did this, HR did that. Hey, sweets, did you know that HR is an employee? That HR has somebody they also have to report to. And a lot of times HR professionals have given the CEO or leadership or managers a different, you know, outcome and say, hey, you should actually do this. And they're like, but we're going to do this instead. And you're going to have to go with that. So
now you're well within their rights to do, right? But also, like, let's be honest, like 8 times out of 10, you guys didn't even tell us what was going on until it was done. So what? Anyway, that's a different.
The hiring managers, you start recruiting and you get some candidates lined up, and then on paper everything's that's not what we're looking for at all. And like, what?
You know, it's why an intake meeting. Recruiters should be having intake meetings with hiring managers every single time you get a job order. I don't care how many times you've worked that job order. You have an intake call with that hiring manager because otherwise you will end up exactly where Warren just said. You're going to have a perfect fit on paper that matches what you guys put down on paper internally. And they're going to be like, not even close.
But then you have to think about those hiring managers or those in leadership who are like, you know what we need. I don't have time to have this intake meeting with you to tell you what is needed in this position. Like, you read the job description just like I did from whatever it came from.
Yeah. So, you know, in my very first big girl staffing job, I was really good at what I did. I was good. And I always required the intake process, right? Because I can't serve you as a client if you don't give me more information. And we had like 22 offices at that company that I worked for at the time, all spread across the Southeast. And I was like outbilling everyone. And everyone else was like, but she turns work away. We don't understand. Like, they truly didn't get it. And I'm like, well, because you've got your team working on jobs that you haven't really truly qualified because you didn't have an intake call. So you have them wasting their time and wasting candidates' time. And I don't do that. I go after work that is real, that they can really have a conversation about. And I drug that with me to the corporate world. So when I had multiple hiring managers that I was supposed to serve as the recruiter of the organization, I would just be like, if you can't sit down and answer these questions, I cannot work on your job. I'm going to put it to the side. You let me know when you have time. Because I otherwise, you're going to get what I think you should have. And you're probably not going to be happy with that because I have a totally different perspective than you do. Exactly. And I don't think enough recruiters push back. And I don't think enough recruiters feel comfortable pushing back on that. Like, that is a legitimate step in the hiring process that should be required everywhere. So that is something that's not like a preference. That's not like a, I hope I have this in my next job. That is something that is required for you to be able to go and execute your job well.
That's going
to
be like when they put down like, oh, well, you put down STD on the paperwork. And I was just like, oh, you want somebody that knows short-term disability rights, I guess. And you're like, no, I need a systems technical developer. I didn't know what that means.
Yeah. I'm not going to lie. I was holding my breath. I didn't know where you're going with that STD1. I was like, what an acronym to pick for whatever she's about to tell us.
Well, I figured this is jaded HR. We needed to have a little fun.
Vince McMahon. gosh.
I don't know. Well, okay. So what about this, though? Because I literally just came off of this, I don't know, a week ago or so. I am going to tell y'all something, honestly. The worst part of my job is rejecting candidates. And I know that feels like an answer a recruiter would give you, but it sucks. And especially like with my husband going through a job search right now and like seeing him have to navigate the rejection, Jasmine's recent experience, like it's so much more personal to me than it ever has been, even though I've always taken that pretty seriously. But I had a position I was just working. Hopefully it'll be closed soon. We've got some good candidates that we've narrowed it down to. 320 people applied like in a week to this job. Wow. And so like at first pass through, you know, when they say stuff like, oh, recruiters spend like 6 seconds on your resume. This is why, because that first pass through to narrow down 320 candidates, I'm looking for the top things that are required for that job, right? Mm-hmm. So typically I'm a team of one, right? I'm a team of one person. So typically if I have like 20 applicants, I can get a little bit personal when I send you a rejection email and I can say, hey, we're looking for this and we didn't see this on your resume. So, you know, we're going to go with a different candidate, but, you know, stay in touch or whatever the right message is. It's different for each client. But when I have 320 of those to do, you kind of get like a standard rejection email and I hate it. And it bugs me. But I think sometimes, you know, candidates don't know what I'm doing on the inside and they're just seeing what they get. And sometimes we're upset for the wrong reasons, because if it says minimum qualifications or whatever these three things are, and you know you don't have those three things, can you really be upset with me for giving you a generic rejection email? I don't know. What do you guys think?
No, absolutely not. At least you're getting something. I feel you wanting to give a personalized touch, especially in your situation. You're a recruiting party company of one, and you know, you don't want to burn those bridges with those clients. But if, you know, I've got 25 plus years in HR, I'm not going to apply for some, I don't know, accounting job somewhere and expect to get an interview. I don't hit the minimum qualifications. But I also do think too many people think that they have to hit each one of the bullet points. Hey, there's 10 bullet points. I hit 5. I'm applying, baby. You know, let's see what it is. Versus, oh, you know, I've got 9 of these, but I don't have the 10th one, so I'm not going to apply. I see people talking about that all the time. Like, you know, especially as easy it is to apply online at most places nowadays, it's Indeed one-click apply.
Wait a minute now, Warren. Wait a minute now.
Now, the ones where you have to apply online, upload your resume, then type your whole resume in again, those 1990s HRS systems, ATSs.
Is anyone completing those? Like, if companies still have those, is anyone completing them or are they all just giving up?
I will say the issue that I found the most is like you would upload the resume and it would put the information in, but it doesn't put it correctly all the time.
Correctly. Mm-hmm.
So those I would be more willing to, you know, correct. But there was one that I would upload the resume and like nothing would come over, and it would then have to, you then have to go through and list every single thing. And I was just like, you know what? This ain't for me.
Yeah.
But so for me, what I found is if it's, you know, something big, when I apply to something, if we have never spoken, then sending me a generic email stating that you're going with another candidate, okay, cool. Once we hit a phone screen, I'm still fine with you sending me an email. I would like it to be personalized to me, but I am still fine with just a phone screen. Once we get more than a phone screen, maybe a phone call, but I'm not really a phone call person, especially if you're about to reject me for something. So that's why it's a little different for me, that it's fine if you would still send me an email, or maybe, you know, tell me, hey, I'm about to reject you, so I can then just send you the voicemail. But no,
hey, Jasmine, can I give you a call to reject you real quick?
Yep. I'm hang up. Call me right back. And I'm going to reject it. So it's just, if that works out. But I think that is an issue with some candidates. They are expecting you to send them exact details on why they weren't selected. And it's just like, you have like nothing. And this isn't one of those, oh, anyone can learn this type of job. This is, no, I need this skill and you do not have this skill. So,
okay. But so we have covered in this conversation alone, and we have been around the world like we always do in our conversations, but we've covered so many different variables about how your application is reviewed, how job orders are taken, how jobs are posted, how you can apply. So that's what job seekers are up against, is we've just shared so many different opinions about the same process, and it's not consistent across the board everywhere. So like my heart goes out to people because I'm like, especially when I see someone who has zero like qualifications or maybe one qualification from the job, I just immediately go like, okay, this person has probably been searching for a job for a while now, and they're just like desperate and they're just applying to everything. And I just wish I had the time to have a one-on-one call with all of these people and say, hey, how can I help you? Because this is not the job. This isn't the one, but tell me what's going on. Of course, again, one person shop. I do not have that kind of time. Even if I had a team of people, I probably wouldn't have that kind of time. But it just sucks when you think of like, you know, you've got recruiters out here, and maybe it wasn't a shady recruiter. Maybe it was a hiring manager giving that recruiter a lot of pressure to get this wrapped up for whatever reason. Like Jasmine's example earlier, they went until the last minute. They've got to get this locked up or they can't proceed with like whatever new business idea or proposal or whatever. But also like I still encounter like some old school hiring managers who think that recruiters should be doing that activity to people to get them to say yes to a job offer. Or like I see it in staffing sometimes when I'm like, you know, the hiring manager will be like, you need to let your candidates know that if they turn this down, like they're making you look bad. No.
Really?
If they turn this down after they interview with you, that's on you, buddy. That's not on me. They're not making me look bad. They're making an informed decision for themselves. But there's all this, the point is there's all this conflicting information, and there's so many people who have their hands in the process. And a lot of times it's just a bad hiring process. Like, what the hell are candidates supposed to do?
It's tough.
I don't know what candidates are supposed to do. Like, seriously, being in this, and I am very, very grateful and blessed that I was able to find a position in the time frame that I have, because I see, you know, I get on LinkedIn every single day and people are out there and they're just, it's been 6 months since my layoff. It's been over a year since my layoff. And it's like, you go, and sometimes I will go and look at what they have and I'm like, wow, I have the stuff, like, I don't know what this person is doing, but from what I can see on their background, it's like, you know, they have some really good experience. I saw right before we got on this conversation, I actually saw someone tweet and they had a picture up of a LinkedIn profile. And it was like, this person stayed here for like 6 months. Another person stayed here for, the same person stayed at another company for 9 months. And they were, the person that posted it was like, do candidates think that this job hopping is, you know, good for them? And I'm like, well, first of all, one position says it was a contract. So if that was a 6 month contract, then they knew what they were going
they
to
complete. Yeah.
Yeah. And then the other one, again, we are in an area in which you don't know that that person decided to leave that job after 9 months. That person could have had a really great, enjoyable experience and got laid off due to a number of reasons, or had a crappy manager and the manager is a hater and was like, you know what, we got to find a way to get you up out of here. Like, y'all, people, you know, and not just recruiters, but like these LinkedIn influencers and everything are just putting so much on what people have on a piece of paper, which, yes, that's somewhere to start, but you really don't know what a person is going through just by looking at their resume. You don't know their background. You don't know the issues that they've had at workplaces that's due to no fault of what they are trying to do as a candidate or as an employee. Like, I think we're just putting so much expectations on employees or candidates, and then as companies we are not putting ourselves or holding ourselves to those same standards just because we make a certain amount of money. It's just like, oh well, we can do what we please. And I think that is where truly the big issue of, you know, work is. But, you know, like I said, well, earlier, I'm on a leadership kick, so we'll see.
Understandably,
well, I think you have the problem. You know, for years we'd shit on millennials because they were the first job hopping group. And then after that, yeah, we now we're shitting on Gen Z. Is there the same way? But now, you know, the millennials are in their 30s and 40s. They've settled down and they're, you know, they're here and they're kicking ass. And
well, first of all, Warren, we were always doing that. So, I mean, hello.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah.
As an old Xer, I just remember all these conversations about the kids coming out today. And now I'm hearing it to go out. You know, soon, you know, they're going back the next group of kids. They're the alphas. And I think they're entering the job force in like 5 years or something like that. Like,
yeah. And
really?
So this is also, I mean, this is a classic hiring mistake. And I believe this is a classic hiring mistake that enables the shitty behavior that we see sometimes from recruiters or hiring managers, is that employers want to hire what they want to hire. You have got to change with the labor market. You can't just will something into existence as an employer. So for these Gen Z folks, specifically for Gen Z, I just had this conversation today with someone who wanted to know where they fell in the market with return to work stuff. But okay. And so I'm talking to them and I'm like, okay, but we're going to see the ramifications for this for years to come, because it's not just, oh, those of us millennials and up who were already in the workforce and went home for a couple of years that was sparked by COVID. It's also the fact that we have college students who finished college remotely when they started in person. We have high school students who finished high school remotely when they started out in person. And so that is their world now. They expect hybrid to be an option for almost anything that they do, because that's what they've experienced. And it was successful for most people. And I know some people are outliers and they didn't have a good time and they want to be in the office, or they want to be, you know, in person or whatever. But most people are to the point where they're going to expect hybrid. So yeah, maybe you can force all your millennials and up back into the office because we know a different time in the workplace. These kids are coming in with different expectations. Mm-hmm. These kids are coming in with different skill sets, different mindsets, different work ethics. And you can't just keep hiring these people and then firing them because they're not doing exactly what you wanted them to do. You have got to change with the labor market. And that doesn't mean, like Jasmine said earlier, that candidates get to come in and then get to walk all over us. It means that maybe you have to do more training than you had to do in the last 5 years. Maybe you have to take more entry-level people. Maybe you have to develop an internal labor pool for a specific skill set that you're not seeing in the job market anymore. Maybe you have to get creative in a lot of different ways to make sure that you're shifting to whatever the available talent is.
Yep.
Otherwise, you're just going to be making poor decisions.
Exactly. Exactly. Well, I was just going to add one personal, the only shitty recruiting experience I ever had as a candidate. It was my first job that I took out of college. I went to work as a retail manager, which I am not well-suited for that at all. But here's why, and I knew that. I knew I'm not a customer service, people-pleasing type person. I knew that, but the line the recruiter gave me was, the pathway to the whole corporation starts in the store. And so I got recruited as assistant store manager. That's a great line, yeah. And that's all it was a line. I was an assistant manager on my second year review. The district manager sat down with me and he said, well, you're on the short list for getting your own store and da-da-da. I'm talking to these future plans. I said, that's great, but that's not what I want to do. I want to, you know, my degree's in HR. I want to get into HR. And the recruiter told me that, you know, the pathway to the whole corporation starts in the store. And he says, I've been with the company 30-some years. I've never seen someone go from the store to corporate. And that was, my resume hit the market like the next morning, and I was not there much longer after that.
Yeah, that's interesting. So I didn't have that experience of them telling me that I would go to corporate. But for my last year or two with Chuck E. Cheese, I really, really wanted to become an HR person at Chuck E. Cheese.
Oh.
Whatever.
I never really pursued it. No, I was so serious. I thought, so Chuck E. Cheese corporate is, they were, I don't know if they still are, was in Texas. And I was like, oh my God, that would be like amazing. I'm going to move out to Texas. I'll be an HR person for Chuck E. Cheese. Like I was ready and willing, and I never pursued it, but that's actually a good line, Warren. I mean, I feel like more companies are, they might have that. You might hear that some more.
Who can I work that in for with my current client base? I don't know. It's a good line. I got a little nervous, Jasmine. I thought you were about to talk about your last recruiting experience. And I was like, what are you about to say? What are you about to say? How would you rate your recruiter on a scale of 1 to 10? 10 being the best.
Oh, can't say what I was about to say, but the recruiter was a 10. I can tell you that much. You put those Taylor Swift hearts down.
I don't know. The kids are doing something different now. Maybe like this.
Okay. All right, Will.
I don't know. That like, my brain, it's hard for my brain. The recruiter thought you were 10 too, but I'm sure I gave you a line. But the difference is, I whatever line I gave you, I believed it. Yeah. I didn't make something up. I believed it.
Wow, we've gone so long today. This is a good episode. I've had a lot of fun, and we got to get y'all back more often. It's been over a year, I think, since the last time we had y'all on, and it's just so much fun. So
I think it's been over a year since we've recorded anything.
Can we just come on your podcast all the time?
Y'all have the you have the open door invitation. Hey, Warren, I want to rant about whatever it is. You've got an audience right here. All Perfect. My dozens of listeners. All our dozens of listeners. But anyway.
We love your dozens of listeners. We love them.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. We're no longer ranked in some of these countries. I haven't looked at the ranks lately. We haven't had a review in a while. So if you enjoyed this episode, give us a review. So
if you didn't enjoy it, don't review that episode. Thank you.
No, I'll read a 1-star review. The only 1-star review we've ever gotten didn't have any narrative to it. We've gotten all our reviews are 5 stars except for one. It's like our Apple rating's like 4.8 or something like that. And the person didn't have the nerve to tell us what it was. I would have read it. I would have had some fun with it, but anyway.
That's probably why they didn't write it.
Well, I think we'll go ahead and land this plane for right now. Thank you so much for being with us and pinch hitting. This has been so much fun. And let's see, best practice tonight. Don't be a shitty recruiter.
That sums it up.
And don't be a shitty candidate. So
just don't be shitty.
Don't be shitty. Yeah, that works too. The intro and outro music is the Underscore Orchestra, Devil the Devil, and our voice artist is Andrew Culpa. I want to thank both of them. But as always, I'm Warren.
I'm Jasmine.
I'm Christina.
And we're here helping you survive HR one what the fuck moment at a time.